I would invite you to take a Bible and to turn with me to Matthew chapter 10. And like last week, we're only going to concentrate on a couple of verses, verses 40 through 42. Matthew 10, 40 through 42. The Pew Bible, you'll find this on page 844. Whoever welcomes you welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Whoever welcomes a prophet in the name of a prophet will receive a prophet's reward, and whoever welcomes a righteous person in the name of a righteous person will receive the reward of the righteous. And whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of a disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward. You may think that this might be a strange passage for a Father's Day meditation. As we think about practicing loving kindness, for many, Father's Day is a time of remembering a father who perhaps was stern and yet in his own way had that sense of care and loving kindness that came forth even in that sternness. Perhaps for others, remembering a father is to remember one who really was very loving and enjoyed hugging the children and spending time with them. For many, the image of Father's Day may be something that is not quite so pleasant. In our world, especially these days, there are those who have suffered at the hands of persons who were fathers but not dads, and there is a difference. And yet, even in those instances, the challenge for each of us, especially we who are male, who have been taught for much of our lives that there are certain roles and certain ways you act, and you don't really show loving kindness openly, in spite of the fact that in the parable of the prodigal and his older brother, the dad did just that. It's a challenge for us to find ways to make sure that that loving kindness is indeed practice, not just something about which we speak. And that not only will others be rewarded by what we do, especially children and grandchildren and others that we might mentor in various ways, but that quite frankly, in doing so, in practicing loving kindness, we are the ones who receive the reward as well. The reward of care and love and respect that comes to those who truly make this a part of their lifestyle, not just for show. You might remember a story recently on the news. The reporter spoke with a real sense of incredulity. A woman came up to a homeless man on the streets of New York City and gave him some food to eat. She had seen the scruffy man walking along, talking to himself, and rummaging through trash cans looking for food. Occasionally he found bits and pieces and ate that food. And so she watched and then went into a restaurant, purchased a meal for him, walked over, gave it to him, wished the man well, and then walked away. Of course, this was caught on camera. In fact, it was caught on numerous cameras. Why? Because the man was actor Richard Gere. All of this was caught on film. People couldn't believe, and it was so newsworthy because the homeless man was Richard Gere and he was in character for a role in a film. In fact, they said that he remained in character after that and continued to rummage through some trash cans until he kind of got out of sight. And the woman had no idea whatsoever who she had helped. Immediately a search was begun to try and find this woman who showed such loving kindness to a scruffy old stranger rummaging in trash cans. I did see later on they did locate the woman, and she actually was a French tourist in New York City and couldn't stand the fact that she saw this man in this very rich, affluent place wandering along looking for food in trash cans. The passage under consideration today is one of many sayings of Jesus about mission. Not just his mission and purpose, but the mission and purpose of we who claim to be Christ followers. It also serves to remind us that our purpose and mission are exactly the same as Jesus. That is, to give our lives for others and the kingdom of God. That is, to spend our lives, all of our lives until we die, doing such. We are Christ's emissaries, and we're expected to act just as he acts. In Interpreter's Bible Commentary on Matthew, Sherman Johnson writes, and I quote, "Early Christians believed, of course, that Jesus had been sent with full authority, and the Jewish rule applied that a man's emissary is just like the man himself." End of quote. As the apostles were to set out on mission, they were not just to preach the good news about Jesus, but they were to accept others, to help others, and thereby be accepted themselves. George Buttrick posits that, and I quote, "Christ sees in his mind's eye the lowly folk, as well as apostles and proven followers who will welcome his ambassadors through acts of loving kindness." End of quote. Jesus teaches that whoever receives one of his disciples, and that includes you and me, actually welcomes Jesus. And the one who welcomes Jesus also welcomes the Father, the one who sent him, and is in relationship even more so with God the Father. This should serve to strengthen our connection between God and us. Not push him further away and hold God at arm's length, but when we recognize that in accepting God's disciples, in accepting God's Christ, we also draw closer to God. This then is to enable us to be much more committed and much more in relationship with God for others. However, Jesus continues here by stating that the motive for receiving another is important as well. To receive someone as a fellow traveler is indeed admirable. But to accept someone expecting to receive something in return is questionable. It would seem that to receive someone because she or he is an ambassador for Christ, to borrow from the language of Paul, we are one who is seeking to further the cause and message of Christ, is an even greater thing. There are three different groups of people, though, that are involved in God's kingdom on earth that are mentioned by Jesus here in this passage. The first group is prophets. Jesus says, "Whoever welcomes you welcomes me. Whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Whoever welcomes a prophet in the name of a prophet will receive the prophet's reward." Jesus states that whoever receives that prophet because he is a prophet and because he is a faithful prophet will receive the same reward as the faithful and faith-filled prophet. In other words, anyone who uses her gift or his gift faithfully to host a messenger of the kingdom is rewarded as if they themselves were that faithful messenger. If we teach our children and our grandchildren and those other children and youth and young adults who come into our lives, if we treat them with that kind of faithfulness in the gospel, then they too might learn not only about the gospel, but to treat others with loving kindness for the sake of the gospel and for the sake of others. What is the grand reward that a person can expect? Buttrick states that a prophet's reward was considered to be a better prophet and a journey further into the kingdom. Well, shoot. You mean I don't get some kind of milkshake or something? I can sit on the hillside and just wait and watch? No. The reward of the prophet, typically, and if you look in the Old Testament especially, the reward that the prophet got was to get to go on and be a prophet again. To share that message of grace and love, that message of prophecy or preaching from God on that journey, whether the journey is smooth or difficult. Jesus knew that sometimes those actions would be unpopular, but he offered the promise to those who would aid in his kingdom's purpose that if you welcome a prophet because he's a prophet, you'll get the same reward as him. Guess what? You get to go out and share that same message with somebody else. It's not about me. It's about God and others. The second group Jesus mentions consists of the righteous man. Sherman Johnson describes the righteous here as, quote, tested and honored Christians, end of quote. Those who have been tested and those who have passed the test and are honored because of it. Righteousness is often seen both as being in a right relationship with God, but it also refers to those whose actions prove a deeper relationship, thereby leading others to proper living. Our righteousness as Christians, but guys, especially our righteousness as fathers and father figures, will be tested. And you know that if you ever had middle schoolers and teenagers. No. Well, that is kind of true. But our righteousness, our relationship with them and with God will sometimes be tested if we claim to be Christ followers. But if we remain faithful throughout those tests, and I would submit especially if we remain faithful throughout those tests with those who come into our charge, God will be present to help us. That is His promise. In welcoming and assisting those who are tested, we also will find strength when our own righteousness is tested. In difficult days, and in times when we must decide whether to reach out to one in need or to go on our own way. And in those times where we'd just as soon pinch off their heads, but instead we respond with loving kindness. Because God has shown us loving kindness. In such an instance, not only does our righteousness increase, but the possibility of those who have come into our lives and into our charge becoming more righteous increases exponentially. The third group mentioned by Jesus is the little ones here. Now, most people think every time Jesus mentions little ones, he means children. I mean, that's a fact. Most people, if you ask them, well, what does Jesus mean by the little ones? They say, well, he's talking about children. And in several instances, yes, that's what he means. But at a number of other places, including this one, the little children are ordinary, everyday disciples like you and me. The ones who are growing daily as ordinary, everyday disciples. Jesus says that whoever gives to one of these little ones even a cup of cool, I mean, we say a cup of cool water. But actually, the Greek text says a cup of cool. That doesn't mean we're being cool. Shall not lose his reward. Whoever gives to one of these little ones even a cup of cool shall not lose his reward. Though we add water to the text, the emphasis is upon going out of our way to satisfy even the smallest, most simple need of someone else, especially those who are fellow followers of Christ. You know, we often rank actions as greater or smaller, just like we rank sins as greater or smaller. But Jesus indicates here that even those things we might think are minor expressions, offhanded kinds of things, if they are expressions of loving kindness in His name, they are accounted as great and good actions for and on behalf of God. But He also says that they are among the expectations for a true Christ follower. Inconvenience is no excuse. It's not just the good things, the big things that we do for others. The expectation is that we do the little things as well. After this, the section actually ends in Matthew chapter 11, verse 1, where it says that Jesus goes from there to teach and to preach in their cities. Ben Witherington, New Testament scholar, writes, and I quote, "Jesus is not satisfied, though, merely to instruct His own pupils. He teaches the public as well, and furthermore, Jesus sets His disciples a good example. He models the behavior He expects." Emphasis is mine there. He models the behavior that He expects. Jesus knows that if He heals a person's body, that person will still go on and die eventually anyway. But if He gives the person the good news and that person receives it, there is an eternal benefit that outweighs the physical. And the smallest word or action by Christ, I would submit to you, and by Christ followers, can make more than a world of difference for someone. Can you think back to a time when someone said or did something, just one word or one action that you almost overlooked, and most people would, but you remember that one word or that one small action as if at that point in time you were the only person in the world that mattered? As Buttrick writes, and I quote, "The saint then does not wish to rest in a golden grove or to bask in the summer sky," and I would add, "or rest upon the praise of others. The true saint covets the wages of going on." End quote. As Ben Witherington notes, there is nothing in this material that encourages empire building, though. Here, the primary concern is indeed the well-being of the others to whom one is reaching out, not just the well-being of the group of which one is a part. The lost are truly lost, and they need to be reached one way or another. You will notice Jesus expects the 12 to do pretty much everything He was doing, teaching, preaching, and healing. End of quote. And guys, that's what we are called to do. Ladies too, but especially, guys, we are called to lead out. To lead out in teaching, in preaching, and in healing. Many times the teaching and the healing are through simple actions. Not screaming and waving a Bible in the face of someone. Sometimes it is in giving a cup of cool, a meal, a hand of friendship, or simply an ear to listen. I ran across 10 things which should be in the thought pattern of every godly man. I have hung up this in my office, but I would like to share quickly. God gives my life purpose and meaning. Number 2, I know where to go when I need answers. 3, God is my shield and my strength. 4, He grants me wisdom and courage just when I need it most. 5, with God, all things are possible. 6, He surrounds me with people who will help me, encourage me, and enlighten me. And I would add to that, so I need to listen. 7, the more I pray, the more I discover the many depths of God and His Word. 8, I'm a better man to my family and friends, not because of who I am, but because of God's love for me and faith in Him. 9, I know God has plans for me of a bright and bountiful future. And I would add, so I need to listen. And 10, God provides me with all I really need in life. While these things are, you might say, well, that's a given. So often we get caught up in the everyday, workaday world that we forget about these things. And many times we overlook the little ones to whom we can share a cup of cool, a meal, just a few moments to listen, or perhaps to catch a ball. The greatest thing that we can do for the furthering of God's kingdom on earth, as fathers, as father figures, as Christ followers, is to practice loving kindness, especially where it is least expected by the recipient. And in that moment, we are being Christ's grace to a world in great need, to the homeless, the hurting, the lonely, the sad, and even the neighbor who wronged us so many years ago. For in them God takes notice. And so as we think about practicing loving kindness, the question for me then becomes, who are my little ones in my charge? A closing hymn, our hymn of decision and reflection, calls upon us to live that adoration. It's hymn number 90. As we stand and as we sing, joyful, joyful, we adore thee. Our altar is open for any decision that you might make. As we stand and as we sing, hymn number 90, joyful, joyful, we adore thee.